Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Mostly Horror early and ad-free on Amazon Music.
Download the app today.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Welcome to Mostly Horror Movie Night.
Mostly.
I am Steve.
And I am Sean.
And this is episode 50. Did you know this is episode 50, Sean?
Oh my God, I feel... Are we old? Are we old now?
We're not old. Okay. This is episode 50. We've taken... if you're listening to this, we've taken a break of a week and 2 days.
It's we're sorry.
2 days late.
Sorry, it's a little bit late. We've life's been kind of nuts lately for both of us. We just had a lot going on.
Yeah, Sean started a new job, and he worked.
I did
the fucking graveyard shift.
Oh, dude, I'm out here, creature of the night, you know. Out here, I go 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. just, and the city doesn't sleep though, so it's fine.
The city does not sleep, and then I just work a lot, and life is hard.
Well, I will say, just to let everybody know, it might take us a second to kind of like, things might feel a little fumbly for a second. Me and Steve are now on completely opposite schedules, but we're making it work. I'm not saying nothing bad, but we're literally, when he is working, I am home. And probably asleep. And then when I am working, he is home and for sure asleep. So
yeah,
we only have a little bit of crossover, but we're making it happen.
It'll happen. It's fine. A couple weeks ago, I don't remember when it was, we saw X.
Yeah, dude.
In theaters. We got to see a screening of X.
Mm-hmm. Super special.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. We saw it before it came out by a couple days, which was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was wonderful. I mean, let's talk about it. What did you think of the film?
Well, so first off, I want to say that the theater that we went to was super cool. They had really cool
Alamo,
posters with
shout out Alamo. To the Alamo Draft House.
I didn't know if we wanted to do it, but yeah, super
Shout out to the Alamo Draft House in Manhattan. Yeah,
dude, they have these giant old posters of like old big like kaiju monster movies, and it was just cool. Like this theater felt right up my alley aesthetically wise. We get in first off, we were invited to this like screening. The food was comped, guys. The beer was comped. I got a little silly. Plus Steve doesn't really partake a lot, so I got one of his tickets. It was a good time.
So that was movie. I mean, yeah, so that was good. And also, so we should preface this by saying we go in and there's not a lot of seats left. Like people had already, people had already sat down. And, you know, there were two seats in the dead center of the front row.
Yep.
And Sean and I we don't love the front row normally. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll do
sure.
it. And there's recliners and there's free food and drinks. And we mm-hmm. will be happy and Mary. So that's we got to preface the whole thing with that. Yep. And then the movie happens. Talk about your
movie. So we're talking about the movie. All right. So I thought that Fresh was Fresh, X. Dude. I thought
we're not X, talking wow. about that.
No, that's just what came out of my mouth. I thought that X was Fresh. I'll say that. It was fun. You know, it's clearly a throwback to some degree to Texas Chainsaw. It's different, you know, but it definitely has that sort of vibe, very like 70s, you know, group of kids out in the places that they shouldn't be, meeting people that they shouldn't meet. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think I said it after Scream 5. Jenna Ortega, please stay in the horror genre. When she is in pain or really afraid, I think she acts. This is not to dismiss anyone else. I think that the cast was great. She acts circles around people, dude, in the horror genre. Like, she is nuts.
She's really good. Jenna Ortega is fantastic. And yes. I mean, there really hasn't been anything that she's been in where I'm like she just, like you said, being in stress. Like those horrific situations, she's killing it. And dude, I'm also very intrigued to see her Wednesday, because she's Wednesday.
I keep forgetting that she's going to be Wednesday.
She's Wednesday in Tim Burton's, which, by the way, Christina Ricci signed on to be in it.
Interesting.
I don't know as who. That's okay. A little side thing. But I'm excited to see her Wednesday, because I agree, Jenna Ortega's just fantastic in literally everything that she does. I agree with everything that you said. I liked it. I thought that it was interestingly shot. There's some editing choices with kind of like sporadic cutting in between scenes as it goes from one scene to another. That was like a kind of interesting choice that I hadn't really seen before. That was neat. I thought the majority of the kills were cool. I loved the first kill. We love a Don't Fear the Reaper playing in a horror movie, as God intended. I just think about Halloween 1. I think like the Rob Zombie Halloween.
Rob Zombie,
like a Don't Fear the Reaper that I think of. But I also am very afraid of old people. Old people are some of the scariest things to me. I don't like watching them. I don't like watching them bump uglies, spoiler alert. But that's one thing that really stuck out, is just like, you know, the old people were old people in this movie, and I didn't love it.
So they I'll say this job, but I didn't I want to stress, I think everybody should watch it. I think it was a lot of fun. The kills are fun. I like the way it was shot and those weird kind of things. I think that might be a throwback to a lot of things that were going on in like 70s cinema. I don't know. I'm no like historian, but it just felt like that. And just, I mean, porn. I will say though that, funny enough, the killer and like the situation itself was kind of the weakest part to me.
Kind of a mythology.
It was just interesting to like to love the tone and love the cinematography and love the cast and love overall the movie, but to be most underwhelmed by like the killer and why and the situation. I also want to say it's obvious. I don't think this is a spoiler. I mean, maybe it's if you haven't seen it. Either way, you'll know right when you watch it.
I already spoiled part of it, so it's fine.
Well, so it's, you know, we have people in costume, like old costume, old makeup. And I think that the movie would have been, I understand why they did it, both in practicality for some of the things that were done and in reusing some cast for specific reasons story-wise that I won't spoil any of that. But okay. I think it would have been a lot more scary to me and creepy if they would have used just like old actors,
two old people.
Especially for our main so it, to me, I just have a hard time seeing past the makeup, and maybe that's just really? me, but it's so, it's so obvious to me.
I agree. I think that this did it better than most like instances of this. I think that, you know, I love Midnight Mass, we've talked about it a number of times, but like
Alex Esso.
Alex Esso's, you know, role in that, you know, is not like you can easily tell it's makeup or easily tell it's wrong. You know what I mean? You're like, you are not old person. Whereas this one, I believed it to an extent, although I knew it wasn't already.
Got you. But, it's it's not it's not that it's bad. In fact, I would argue that the makeup is incredibly impressive. It's just that I can tell. And I think part of that for me, I just have a little bit of a hard time suspending my disbelief, which is unfortunate. Like that's probably a me problem. But I just think about movies like The Visit, The Taking of Deborah Logan, you know, like movies with these really wonderful, like older actors that bring a level of creepiness that I think a costume in many cases just can't. But I understand their choices. I also got to point out there's one kill that I thought was like really bad. And that was the through the wall. And that's all I'll say. Yeah. The barn door, you'll know their editing there was weird. It felt super just like, oh, like a kill I've seen a million times, but like edited in the worst way you could edit it. Like that's my one strange, like big negative against it. But for the most part, I liked it.
You know who was in the movie?
Who, Steve?
Kidjamin Cuddles, dude.
Kid the man Cuddy. On the moon himself?
Kid Cudi was in that movie.
Mr. Solo Dolo?
Do you want to tell a story?
I do. So it's wild, you know? We're sitting there and we watch this movie and we're like, yeah, that was good. And I'm buzzing. You know, I got three good beers with me. I'm feeling good. Me and Steve are like, that was fun. It was cool to have this experience. We got full bellies. Movie ends and
credits are still rolling.
Credits are still rolling. And we're looking at each other like, you know, we're going to sit through the credits and then we're going to go home.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden staff brings out two chairs right in front of us and they set bop, bop. And if they bring out chairs, that means, especially for a screener like this, that means somebody that's involved in the movie is about to speak somehow. And we're like, who the fuck? Literally, I'm pretty sure one of us said like, who the fuck is here? Like, who did they get?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Asa Akira walks out.
I think that's what
you mean. Yeah. Asa Akira, who, if you don't know her work, is an adult actress. Maybe you've heard of her. And so she walks out and she sits down and she wasn't in the movie. So we're like, what? And then Kid motherfucking Cuddy walks out, just walks behind us. And like Steve said, the reason that Steve prefaced our front row seats earlier, guys, they are 6 feet away from us. We are
the closest people.
I could see up Kid Cuddy's nose, dude. It was, I could see his pores. All right.
Yeah.
And I'm a big Kid Cudi fan. Like Man on the Moon specifically I love that album.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I bump Kid Cudi. So it was crazy. And especially when you got a buzz and we're both thriving and we've already are enjoying the coolness of getting invited to stuff like this. It was just rad to have them on. So what was going through your head, Steve?
It was fantastic. I mean, I was just like, you know, we talk about this all the time, but like we live in New York and this is the place where that sort of stuff happens. It's really cool. Like, you know, we get to see, you know, normally when movies do early releases or limited theaters, like it's in New York and LA, like we get to see stuff like that, you know, and it's, it's really cool. And yeah, just the fact, like kind of the serendipitous nature of like this just happening. We almost didn't go to this screening and then some openings happened and we were able to get into the screening. Mm-hmm.
We were invited and then uninvited.
Well,
and
not,
then,
no,
we were not uninvited, but we were invited.
There and wasn't enough room.
Yeah. Yeah. And it so, was like, you want to go
opened up for us.
Maybe you can't go. Hey, you can go.
So, yeah. And then on top of that, you know, Kidjamin Cuddles is giving an interview. And it was cool. I mean, he talked about the process of shooting this. He talked about, you know, his past with horror, which was really cool. Also, Owen Campbell, who plays RJ in the film, was there as well watching it. I don't know if this is the first time that he's seen it. I imagine, you know, because it's not like they probably haven't done a bunch of screenings. So, RJ from the movie was there, which was really cool. And, you know, him and Kid Cudi got to connect for their first time since New Zealand. Yeah. But yeah, it was just wild. And then we just left like nothing happened.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was such a crazy thing. I just remember us look. We just kept looking at each other like, what is happening?
What's our life? He walked up and you were laughing. You were trying hard to stifle your own laughing, so you weren't laughing while sitting in front of Kid Cudi.
Yeah,
and he's trying to speak, like you were stifling your laughter. No, I mean, because it was surreal. It's like one of those, like, what the hell is happening moments.
It was fun. It was a good time. Yeah. So we get to say that we got to watch Kid Cudi get interviewed by a porn star, right in front of us, and it was a wild time. So.
It was crazy. X was good. I just learned it comes out on Blu-ray in May. So if you haven't checked it out in theaters, I mean, watch it in theaters. It's got a crazy wide release for an A24 horror film. I mean, it's still available. So I would recommend recommend that you go watch it if you can.
Is it streaming on anything right now, or am I thinking?
It's not streaming. It's just in theaters. Yeah.
Got you. Okay.
But you know what is streaming? This movie called Fresh.
I talked about it earlier on accident.
So our interview, which we buried the hell out of the lead. Today we're talking to Lauren Kahn. Lauren is the screenwriter and executive producer, one of the executive producers of Fresh, starring Sebastian Stan and Daisy Edgar Jones. God, I hope I didn't butcher that. Give me 2 seconds.
Nope, you got it.
Hold on.
I believe in you.
Are you sure that I did?
I don't know.
Daisy Edgar Jones. I got it right. Oh, thank Christ. Sebastian Stan, Daisy Edgar Jones. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Horror, thriller, dark comedy. Lauren calls it kind of like a tonal film. It's got a bunch of different, you know, tones to it. We have a great conversation with her. We talk a little spoilery bit about Fresh as well. This movie's been out for a minute. It's on Hulu. If you haven't seen it, as always, stop what you're doing. Go watch Fresh. Because we're not just plugging it. Yeah, we're not plugging it just because it's genuinely a very, very fun and entertaining film. And you all should watch it, you know, far before you listen to our conversation. That said, we have a great conversation with her. Do you have any thoughts, anything you want to kind of throw out there before we jump into that convo?
I loved Fresh. I just got to further everything that you said. Like, absolutely, guys, go watch it, especially before this. It is truly like it's a great horror movie. I think that you'll have a lot of fun. To what Lauren said, if you can, start sending text right now. Invite a couple of your like your friends over that you could have a really good time watching a horror movie with. Get like a couple people, get some snacks, throw it on, and just like have fun together. I think it's one of those movies. I'm a big fan of like, turn off the lights, sit in your room by yourself or with someone who's going to shut the fuck up and watch a movie. This isn't that movie. I think that you can have a lot of fun. Pay attention. I'm not saying watch it casually, but have fun. Talking to Lauren was great. I wish that we had more time with her. You know, we didn't even get to get into cannibals and bummer. So I thought it was great. And I think you guys are going to love the movie, and I think you're going to love our conversation.
I agree. And stick around after the conversation. Sean and I are going to play a very quick game. It's very quick. He doesn't know.
I don't know what it is.
Okay. So stick around for that. And hope you guys enjoy our interview.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Thank you.
All right, we are joined today by Lauren Kahn. Lauren is a screenwriter, director, and actress, most recently penning the Searchlight Pictures film Fresh. Fresh premiered in January at Sundance and has garnered heaps of praise since its release. Lauren, thank you for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me. I'm
totally pumped. Yeah, absolutely. So are we. Sean and I, we'll talk about it more, but we both enjoyed this film a lot.
It was very good.
Yes, no, it's fantastic. And we'll obviously talk about that a bit more, but Sean, take it away.
One of the first things that we like to ask all of our guests that come on is, you know, sort of your introduction to the genre and how you got into it. In an interview with the Hollywood Reporter, you said that you loved horror films growing up and you watched them with your best friend every weekend, but then you stopped watching them. So I was just curious if you could tell us about some of those earliest horror watches and why exactly you stopped.
It's funny because I feel like I was a bit more fearless when I was younger with horror movies, and maybe I didn't connect it to reality as much or something. Like, it seems so far away. And then as I get older, you're like, oh, could this stuff really happen? My best friend and I, we cycled through all of them, and like probably at too young of an age when you like kind of think about it, where it's like ones that really like stick out to me were like The Omen. Like, they're like the hanging scene in The Omen sort of like plays in my head. We did like all the Friday the 13th. We did like Puppet Masters. Okay. We did a lot. And for me, the turning point was Candyman, which like kind of scared me so much that I needed to take a break like from horror movies like at the time, and maybe I was too young. And so then it was like we were taking a break, my best friend and I, and because I have this like vivid memory of like the video store and the popcorn, and like you go to the back where the horror movies were and the VHS tapes and all that, and I was like, let's take a break for a little while, like I think I need. And then I just got like more and more afraid of them in a way as I got older, where I needed to know everything about them. I would watch the trailer and like so want to see them. And occasionally during the day, I would definitely be watching them. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, and then my best friend in the world now, she loves horror movies. She actually produced Ready or Not, which is, I can see.
Yes.
So she's a big horror connoisseur and has like, she like wants to be scared. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting because we moved to LA together and like lived together. And she was always, as an adult, forcing me back in. Cause she was like, she just wants things to like, I think there's a ghost in my car. At one point, this was like a real thing going on. And you know, I she wants to see aliens. She wants to be scared. She wants to like create terrifying experiences for herself, which is like the complete opposite of me. But she kind of got me back in to the genre to not be afraid. And cause it is such an exciting genre, like, you know, just being shocked and being scared and like having those emotions. So that was sort of my experience as a kid, and then like the in-between of like being too afraid and then like coming back into it essentially. But always loving it.
I love that. Also, your friend sounds like a great friend, and I just have to say, I'm full tinfoil hat about aliens. I'm right there with her.
100%. Like, always sending, you know, that was the funniest when she was like, my car is haunted. Like, there's a ghost in my car. This light turned on, and you know, it was like these like elaborate stories, of just, you know, wanting to be afraid. Where me, I would always be such a scaredy cat, and like the people I work with would always prank me and like do terrible, scary things to me because I was just like the easiest victim when it came to that. And I hated it at the time. So,
okay. <you know>. So, so you obviously went away from the horror path, but then you come back and you write a horror script. So can you, you know, obviously this process, it's so crazy. You know, people will see a movie come out, and I guess I don't really know. I don't know how to speak for the layman, but it feels like back before I was a part of the industry at all, like you would see a movie and you're like, oh yeah, you know, they probably made that within a year maybe. But like you worked on Fresh. How long ago? When did you start writing that script?
I mean, it's like I started working on it. I have a kid now who's 2 years old, my youngest. And so I think about it was like right before I got pregnant, because it was right when I was about to have her that we signed Mimi Cave on as the director. So it was probably like going back, you know, I wrote it rather quickly, but then it was like, we really took our time to sort of put it together once the producers had read it. So like the whole process, I probably wrote it 3 years ago. essentially now. Because you figure I wrote it, then it was like putting it together for a year, then it was figuring it out with Mimi for a year, then we sold it, and then it was making it, and now it's out. So it's long and short when you think about like each chapter, I guess.
Yeah. But I'm just curious, were you a part of the, I mean, I know every you know, feature probably goes through its own processes, but you're talking about getting production on first, which is obviously like a huge hurdle. Were you a part of packaging after that? Like, were you focusing and saying like, Sebastian Stan is the man, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'm very blessed and lucky that with my original scripts and my original ideas, you know, to stay close to them, I insist on being a producer as well. So, because that's just a way a writer can stay close to the project. And absolutely, this was definitely like my baby. So luckily enough, you know, I came through the Gary Sanchez Hyper Object family. Mm-hmm. And so I brought it to them first, and luckily those producers I'm very close with, and we have sort of an unspoken first look deal where I always bring my stuff there first, and they were like, holy shit, what, this is not a comedy. Like, I didn't tell them anything. I was like, just read it. Like, I literally told them nothing. It was the most fun. And so from there it was, you know, they knew that I was going to stay on it as, you know, and I was also going to be an executive producer. So I was a big part of like every step of the way from beginning to end, thankfully. I was lucky enough to be a very big part of it. I was up there the whole time during filming and, you know, all of that. So
that's amazing. I feel like it can be like really, it can be kind of polarizing. Like either you are, or you're someone bought your spec script and like, you know,
speaking freely, it's rough to be a feature writer in a lot of ways. And I've been, a bit, you know, passionate about it more and more when I see the way, right, it's funny because in TV it's different, you know. I find that TV writers, there's a lot more like created by, and the respect is there in a different way, where features kind of like, feature writers a lot of times get the bottom of the barrel and are sort of forgotten about once the movie's made, and it pisses me off, you know. And I was lucky to be able to be an executive producer and have great producers and have a collaborative partner in Mimi. But I see the way, you know, from Sundance on, you know, the way our producer had to constantly be like, this is Lauren's movie too, you know, and remind them that. And I see it way worse with other feature writers where their spec is written and it's like, see you later. And I can't imagine what that feels like to watch your movie go off and to be no part of it.
Right.
So I'm passionate about that and more where I want to speak out about that. And I think that, you know, when it's an original story, I can't imagine what that feels like to hand it off and to be no part of the creative process after that.
Yeah. I just watched this this documentary on Shudder about the process of making Alien, and I feel like sometimes it passing from person to person can be this perfect mixture. But with some of the guests we've brought on, one of the things I'm always fascinated about is when we have writers or things like that where they kind of started the idea and then it gets passed on. I love that you were able to keep yourself in the loop because
it was important to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know that features are different too, because sometimes it's a producer's idea and then there's a million writers on it. So like, there's also that side of it where I've rewritten many other people's projects. Mm-hmm. And so that's different, you know, but when I see that it's like an original story, you know, you hope that that person is a part of it, you know, in a big way.
Right. So, I mean, clearly this project and this movie means a lot to you. Can we talk about the sort of the inspiration for the script and stuff? I mean, there's some pretty heavy subjects here that really touch on the, you know, the reality of dating and the very fearful, especially for women and female presenting people dating today and just kind of the dangers there. So could you talk a bit about where that came from and why this idea?
Yeah, you know, there's this sense, I think, of like operating in the world as a woman that I think a lot of times men don't even think twice about, you know, even when it was like, you know, I've mentioned this before, but walking my dog at night, you know, and my husband's like, go walk. And I'm like, I'm afraid because no matter who it is, if there's someone walking behind me, I get a little sense of dread because I can't see them. And who is that? And do I have my cell phone on me? And are they going to come closer? And am I in public? And like, there are these like little things at the way we operate, and I've always operated since I was young. And, you know, there was something about tapping into that. It actually, I don't think I've mentioned this anywhere else, but it came actually from a Twitter thread that this woman wrote about selling her washing machine on Letgo. And she did this whole thread about how, you know, normally when you sell something, well, and you're a woman, you meet them in public. Well, this was my washing machine, so the person had to come to my house. So when I was selling and I had to make sure my husband was, it was in the morning and my husband was home from work. Well, this one guy shows up after her husband leaves for work and he's at her door and he's like, well, I just want to come in for a second and see it in the basement. And she kind of goes through like at each moment, okay, how tall is this guy? Is he older? Should I be afraid of him? Should I let him into my house? Then she does let him in and they're like in the basement and some weird shit kind of happens where like she's at the bottom. Cause then he's like, oh, I think we can actually carry it out together. And it was like going through each step. And then he kind of says something kind of creepy. And he ends up leaving, but then like comes back later. And like, it's a scary kind of story, but all these guys in the thread were like, I would never think about that if I was selling something on Craigslist. Like I would never think twice. And she's going through like, how old is this guy? Okay, he's wearing a wedding ring. Okay, I could probably let him into the house. He just wants to look at the washing machine. What are the chances that he's a crazy person? You know, and like, well, my kid's napping and just all of those things. And then it just got me thinking about that in particular.
Yeah.
And then I was just thinking about dating and trust and when we show our whole selves and dating online and like just the whole projection of it all. And like when you trust your gut and when you let that guard down. And then I just went to like the worst possible scenario, you know, I was like, okay, what's the worst fucking possible thing that could happen? And then as I thought of it, I was like, well, I want it to be fun. Like I was like, listen, if you go too dark with this, the movie going experience is just darkness and you're sitting there and it's so heavy and that's not my sensibility, I think. So for me, it was like, I, this tone genre that it's emerged the last 10 years that I just love so much that kind of proves like, you can have it all. Like you can laugh, you can cry, you can gasp, you can just be shocked. Yeah. If you're entertained, you're going to be like, well, that was fucking fun, you know? I love that, you know? And even Parasite more recently, and I've mentioned kind of other ones that were inspiring, Killing Eve and Get Out, and like you're having real stakes and real violence and real fear and then like laughter and you're laughter, like, okay, well that's like working. So that was a big thing of then taking that crazy idea and making it real, but moments of levity and moments of like a weird sense of like, should I be laughing? But I don't know if I should be. And so that was a really sort of fun thing to tackle within the script.
So directly related to that, one of the things I want to talk about is one of the like iconic parts. I mean, there's a lot of honestly very iconic parts in this film, but one of them that I pull out instantly is the dance scene. Sean and I were talking about this before you got on, but I'm a sucker for dance scenes, especially in, you know, calling Fresh a horror film, in horror films. I have Ex Machina is one that comes to mind. There's a great Oscar Isaac dance scene. There's a new Apple show out called Severance that is very kind of dystopian and dark.
I know, I need to see that. I'm friends with Adam Scott.
Yeah, 10 out of 10.
I gotta see it.
But so I'm very curious, you know, besides, you know, adding levity, is there anything that a dance scene specifically gives you in that moment? And we can be spoilery too. We always tell people to watch movies before listening, but what does putting that dance scene specifically kind of give you in the context of your story there?
Well, it's interesting because the dance scene evolved in a way that was a beautiful thing and had a lot to do with the director. There was always two dance scenes. There was always a dance scene at the beginning and there was always a dance scene at the end. But the choreographed nature of it evolved with Mimi's direction. And that was something that she really wanted to try. She wanted to try this choreographed straight to camera. Because originally the way I had written it, it was really more about her like gaining this power in the dance. Yeah. And the way I had originally written it, it was like her, like this final like moment of like power that she was like about to do this escape and like getting like sort of like the way I'd written it was like the like essence of all the women before her. And she was like, it was like very, like, it was very primal the way it was written and very like kind of sexy and primal and loose and like not this person we met at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So I had this song in mind at the time that I was so married to, but like didn't quite work thematically at the end of the day. Like I just loved it so much. It's a song called Meet Me in the Woods by Lord Huron.
Okay.
And it's just a really dope song worth listening to. And why I loved it was that the scene sort of came to me when I heard this song, like it played out in my head. So yeah. I was so like married to it, but as we started filming it became apparent that like the song didn't quite fit with the vibe and like the and also the vibe that I created for Steve's sensibilities and Steve's music. And Mimi, you know, she comes from dance and music videos. And she was like, I really want to try something different. And, you know, she won me over and I was like, this could be really fucking cool. And yes, it's not what I originally thought it was going to be, but it ended up being like one of the standout moments. It's the meme. So that's a way in which the collaboration was such a beautiful thing because she was like, I see something a little different if you give me the freedom to do that. And and we were picking a different song for it. And then, it was just so dope. So like, again, dance was always important to me and those two mirroring dance scenes. But it evolved in a way that I thought just ended up being so amazing and so cool.
Yeah. I do love it as that transformative scene where
it still is.
Yeah, exactly. To me, it's like she's not, but you feel that visually she's like succumbed to, you know, whatever's happening. She's in line with Steve at that point, literally, figuratively. So it's a very transformative scene. And then
totally,
you know, goes so well with the escape right after it. So like that makes complete sense.
And the music, like talking about just the way the collaboration works. So Mimi came with this idea. We all decided that the song didn't quite fit. And then I was like, you're right. It needs to be that 80s vibe, the way we've kind of created for Steve. And then the song itself, when we were editing, that was our editor who like, was like, I think it should turn into this other like French song, or I think it's French or Spanish, where it's like so dope. And so that was the editor putting his stamp on it, you know, and continuing that, like to elevate that vision that is so awesome.
Yeah. I think that you nailed, you were talking about tone and stuff earlier and with this conversation still, like the dance of it. I'm all about going full dark too. Like I think you could have done this movie and gone full dark and I would have loved it, but it probably wouldn't have been as easily digestible and kind of getting the hype that it is now. Like it takes a more specific kind of person. And I think the messages are really important where getting it out to more people is great. One of the tonal things that I really want to talk about, I love this so much, but your title card placement, like late into the movie, it was like delightfully creepy but fun at the same time to just have gone that long. Like we both reacted viscerally when that started. It was very just like
we were watching it with our other two roommates and it happened and we just both went,
we looked at each other like nice.
And again, it's like one of my favorite moments that did not come from me. Because but by the way, I get chills every time.
Yes.
So the tonal shift was always there in a very big way. I had written the beginning in this sort of unassuming rom-com way. And what's crazy is when it goes to originally in the script, it's like, boom, black, darkness. Then you're seeing these fuzzy images. She's being dragged. She's looking up. You're seeing someone go through her purse. And so like, it was like so ready and ripe for the picking, but it was Mimi and Martin. It was the director and editor that actually put the credits there and have those images, which are still important, being sort of the credit sequence of him going through her bag and going and the art in the house and all that. Again, like talk about a dream collaboration.
When
she first showed us that, I got like such chills. I was like full. I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is the most brilliant thing. I'm so like happy, you know? And so I can't claim a ownership over that amazing idea of putting the credits there. And it, to me, it was, you know, I always like pitched it. I said, I wanted to start out as a rom-com, turn into a horror movie and end as a Quentin Tarantino film was the way that like, I kind of pitched it and
nailed it.
You know, having that differentiation of that, of, you know, that clear differentiation, right. Of like, it was always clear to me of like, once the darkness hits and she's now underground, like, okay, our rom-com is over in a lot of ways. Yeah. I mean, sort of not in certain weird ways, but that was such a amazing rug pull for the audience, you know, to be like, oh shit, no. Okay. We're watching a different movie. Okay.
Yeah.
So it was such a brilliant way to clearly differentiate sort yeah. of the tone shift.
Yeah. To me, it was like a delightful slap in the face that I just appreciated awesome. The hell out of.
Every screening, everything we've done, I get so excited when that moment's about to happen, where I'm just like looking around at people watching at the screen. I'm like, oh my God, it's about to happen. Yeah. So it's such a fun moment. Know.
Yeah. And 33 minutes in, regardless of if the title card's there or not, your tonal shift at 33 minutes is pretty, you know, there's a lot of films that will take the chapter route, you know, which I'm a big fan of chapters. I'm a big fan of part one, part two, whatever.
Right.
But, you know, I guess having such a consistent tone and shifting that tone so deep into the, 30 minutes is pretty deep into the movie, I would say. And then shifting it after too, like it was very, Sean and I just talked to Tracy Toms from Death Proof not too long ago. And the end of it's very Death Proof. You know what I mean? Like it's very,
I was definitely inspired. I was like, let's just go, you know, and even like the end of, what's it called? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or whatever. Yes. Just like when it just goes balls to the wall and you're like, exactly. Like that's, I wanted that sort of cathartic feeling.
Yeah. Full turn, you know,
it 100% works. So we just have two other things. One thing that, I like to do when I have the ability to, is sometimes scour through, you know, the social media of the people that we're talking to, and nothing bad, I promise. But I love Twitter, because Twitter is such a awful and wonderful place at the same time. But you have two tweets about horror that I want to just ask you about. You don't have to really, you know, go into big detail. One of them you've already touched on. So in 2017.
Oh my gosh.
You said it takes a lot for me to go to see a scary movie because you always get scared, but you had to see Get Out. And you said it was so fucking good. You talked about Get Out a little bit as like kind of inspiration for this, but can you, you know, what, obviously so many people love that film as we do as well, but what is it about Get Out that really sticks out to you?
I mean, the fun, right? You're able to digest the horror with those moments of levity. Mm-hmm. And I think what's exciting about that is, like you said, like there's a non-horror audience that is able to dip their toe in essentially and still get scared, but they're able to watch it. And I wanted, you know, my aunt was like, I fucking loved your movie. Like, you know, like people that maybe aren't full like horror buffs were able to say like, I didn't think I could stomach this. I didn't think I could stomach body horror, but like, I was engrossed and I was entertained and I was excited. And I think that's what Get Out did to people. And it was like the permission to take it to a place that you didn't think you could, maybe essentially for a while. And it was just, you know, watching it with an audience, like, you know, sadly I think more people saw it that it went to a streamer, but you know, with COVID and everything, it, you know, it ended up on Hulu. And the saddest part for us was just the audience experience, because when we did the test screenings, it was a freaking circus. It was so much fun. And people that had knew nothing about it, you know, gasping, standing, laughing, cheering, you know, fucking get him. Like just that experience, you know, I remember the head of the studio was like, it just felt like a rock concert in here. And you know, that was, you know, sort of the saddest part, but encouraging people to see it with friends and not see it alone and see it with people and have that like what the fuck, like that's such an integral part of a movie going experience, right? And so seeing Get Out in a crowded theater and having that was so fun and so inspiring, and you know, wanting to hopefully do something that does something like that.
We are huge advocates of the theater going experience on here, and I hadn't even really thought about it, but Fresh is such a perfect theater watch, so that is a bummer. We enjoyed our home watch, but in my head I'm like, wow, that would have been just like packed. Yeah, it would have been perfect.
It was a trip.
The next one will get a wide release.
Yes.
Know. All right, one more. In 2020 you asked, is there a horror movie about being tickled? I know there's a doc, but like a horror movie. I just want to know the context. So I think Tickled, if you haven't seen it, the documentary, might as well be a horror film.
Right. It turns into one. I've seen pieces and I haven't seen the whole thing, but it was funny because I was talking to my best friend about it, and then her and her husband ended up watching it, and they're like, that was one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, okay, I guess I need to. And then I think it got brought up again with my husband, where I was like, there's nothing more it being tickled is like one of the worst, most like helpless feelings in a way.
Absolutely.
Like, it's awful.
Yeah. Maybe yeah. there needs to be just a straight, but I heard the doc is, it evolves into something quite dark.
It gets weird. I'll say that. Everybody should watch it, but also you're not going to thank me after watching it.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
No, yeah.
Right.
Tickled
right. Is, yeah. No, I need to just bite the bullet and see the full thing and not just.
You're going to watch it. You're going to get inspired and write the craziest.
Maybe
script.
I do write the craziest tickled horror movie.
Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah. All right. So. Obviously, I mean, we got to let you go soon. But before we do, we mentioned this before. We'd like to ask our guests for what we call mostly horror recommendations. So, you know, if there's a couple of films that you've been watching recently or something that you, you know, think that the listeners should be checking out, if you want to drop some golden nuggets to our listeners.
I mean, it's not like new, but a movie that as a kid really stopped me in my tracks and was like, a real what the fuck movie as far as horror mm-hmm. goes was Sleepaway Camp. Not sure okay. if you guys have seen that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a moment in my life where, you know, the ending on that one really, really throws you for a loop. So that just came to mind as like a what the fuck kind of movie. But a TV show that a little bit of the fighting in the movie was inspired by what is this show called Happy Valley. It's a British show. Their first season of it, I think, is like a perfect. It's like, I think it's only like 7 episodes. It's on Netflix, but there's this really amazing fight scene in it that is so gritty and not quick, cool cuts. And it's like the lead of the show in this like really crazy fucked up fight scene. And it was a big inspiration for the kitchen fight scene for me and the grittiness of it and the like edge of your seat. Like these aren't heroes doing cool moves. These are just like three like girls trying to save themselves. And yeah. I think there's this really like edge of your seat, stand up in your couch, like scene in Happy Valley yeah. like that. But it's a really cool, like crime thriller show about this like small sleepy town and like, a guy getting out of jail and this other like kidnapping thing going on, but it's a really good bingey British show from a few years ago. That was like a little bit inspiring for me. Those are the only, here's what's going to happen is we're going to stop and I'm going to think of something way cool.
All the time. We will post your recommendations in a couple of days. When we do that, we'll tag you and you can just throw a list in the comments. I totally forgot these eight things too. No, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Lauren, thank you for being on the podcast. We're really excited for people to check out Fresh if they haven't already. Is there anything else that people should be looking out for, you know, in the coming impending months or anything like that?
I mean, I'm working on a TV show now, another loving these fucked up ideas. I wouldn't say quite horror, but I have sort of a dark with some levity fucked up thriller idea I've just started working on that I'm
perfect.
I'm pumped about that I'm kind of focusing on aside from some other like other people's stuff that I'm helping out on.
Sweet.
But yeah,
well, we're excited for whatever's next and thank you so much for having me.
You guys are awesome.
Yeah
thank you. I loved having you.
Bye.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a car or a house. It's the four wheels that get you where you're going and the four walls that welcome you home. When you combine auto and home insurance with Amica, we'll help protect it all. And the more you cover, the more you can save. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Welcome back to a game that we haven't played a game in a while, have we?
Yeah.
We were all gung-ho saying we're going to play games. And then life said, well, you get a job and you work different hours. And
yeah. But we're not letting them go. We're fighting for them. We love games. They're fun. Yeah. It's just, you know, lining it up and trying to, A, it's hard to think of games, but B, it's mainly like getting our people together and recording. So
if you have any game ideas,
Shoot them at us.
You know, shoot them at us at Mostly Horror Movie Night on Instagram, at Mostly Horror on Twitter. Send us an email if you'd like at mostlyhorrormovienight@gmail.com.
Fax us. Send an owl our way.
Today, Sean, do you know what happened 2 days ago? What was Sunday?
Sunday was the Oscars.
Sunday was the Oscars. We saw, you know, we saw Coda win Best Picture. We saw Dune take home a bunch of technical awards. We saw Will Smith slap Chris Rock on stage.
Slap the shit out of Chris Rock.
It was an enjoyable afternoon to be had by all, with the exception of probably Chris Rock. Today, Sean, I want your Seanskers. All right. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to throw out some categories like Best Picture, Best Actor, blah, 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 blah. I don't want you to think. I can tell you're thinking right now. Don't think about a goddamn thing. I'm going to give you a category, and we're not limiting this. We're not going to say within the past year. We're not going to say within, you know, whatever. I'm going to say a category, and I want you to say the first horror film that comes into your brain.
This is stressful.
We'll talk about it, and I won't. I'll start with the strange ones first. Not strange. Start with some smaller ones first.
Okay.
The Academy Award for Best Cinematography goes to...
You're a dick.
Best cinematography.
The immediate things that... What are like the prettiest movies I've ever seen? Hereditary comes to my mind. I really loved Hereditary cinematography-wise. But I'm also going to say... Honestly... one second, just give me one goddamn second. I'm going to lock in for this one. I am going to lock in Hereditary. I think it's beautiful. I hate that I'm sure that I can think of a million other things. This game is stressful. Fine. Hereditary.
It's fine. It makes it fun. Hereditary is a good one. It's very well shot and very, you know, cinematography kind of loops in lighting and all that sort of stuff too. It's very aesthetically, you know, pretty clean. Cool. All right. So we're going to go with best, and this is not practical, best visual effects.
Not practical.
Unfortunately, there's no best practical effects.
Well, that's tough. Can I say The Evil Dead remake? And I know you're not focused on practical effects, but I think like visually, I think some of the coolest kills, and I almost said that for cinematography, and I bet you would have laughed, but I thought that visually that movie is just such a fucking ride. The remake, and I know like there are probably people freaking out about that, but truly I think when I think of like great visual effects in a movie, that's one of the ones that I go to. I think that it's the perfect blend for a horror movie of practical effects and CGI like together to where it was just cohesive. Definitely.
I agree with that. Absolutely. I mean, it takes visual effects to make practical effects look good in modern films. You can't just have a practical effect by itself. Like you need, a little bit extra. All right. Good choice. We're going to keep up the pace. Best hair and makeup. It's okay. You can think for a second.
Hair and makeup. So not like a costume design. That's a different thing.
It's not best costume. That's the next
hair one. And makeup.
And it can be like, you know, special effects makeup too is part of it. Like Star Trek has been nominated for best hair and makeup multiple times.
You got me looking at my list over here, dude.
It's hard. It's hard to think of things.
This is actually very difficult. Can I say, I don't fucking know. All right. Actually, no, I do know what I'm going to lock in just for this. I want to throw it out there. I want to throw a little whatever at Vera West and say The Bride of Frankenstein. Yeah, because what a fucking cool design that is. And the latest issue of Fango has a whole thing about her. And it's very
iconic, you know, it's an iconic hair and makeup.
100%. And I'm also, I'm going to say, like, for anybody that doesn't know, look into Vera West. She basically designed all of the like leading roles for old, like leading women roles, and had like oversaw all of the men costume designs and hair and makeup and stuff for all of the old Universal picks, and was basically uncredited. So yeah, I'm going to lock in Bride of Frankenstein specifically for hair and makeup, because what a hairdo.
All right. That sounds good to me. Next one is going to be best costume design. You already said it. So what's your
best costume design? The Pan in Pan's Labyrinth, the Fawn in Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan. Okay.
100%. Easy.
Pan's Labyrinth. That's a good one. That's how it should be. You need to be quick on your toes with these. All right. Next one. Best animated feature.
Just in general. Fuck you.
Well, no, it's horror.
Right. Well, right. Right.
Yeah.
This shouldn't be that hard for me. Is it bad that like Paranorman immediately comes to my head, but I feel like I'm gonna kick my own ass? I'm gonna say Paranorman right now, and I feel like I'm forgetting one that I like absolutely love or something.
These are the end all be all answers, and you can never change them. No, these are just your first reactions.
Paranorman. I love Paranorman. I love Leica. I love everything that they do. I think Paranorman is great.
That's fair. Paranorman's fantastic. I feel like you might double up with this one, but what's your best horror international feature?
International feature? You think I might double up? Oh, so I mean like Pan's Labyrinth again. I don't want to have it sweep. So
I guess that's fair. Yeah.
So can I talk about something we watched recently or no?
Yeah.
Should I not? Well, like something sure. That we watched recently
No,
probably not. Can't. Okay. No. Then there's what an embargo. I'll say. Yeah, I figured. International feature.
I just want to say this is very fun to be able to have you be unsuspecting.
It's so hard to think when you're put on the spot. I get now why they're horror wrecks. Like why it stresses them out, because like I did before, I was just like, it's fine. Like you can just think of something.
Just think of something. Yeah.
I guess because I don't want to specifically double down, I'm going to double down on Del Toro, but I'm going to say Kronos, and I really need to rewatch Kronos. I think it's beautiful. It's great. It's good stuff.
It's great. It's a strange one, but it's a good one.
Yeah. I might
throw
something at you in a minute. If anything else comes up.
All right. These last four need to fly through. We're going to go with this one. This one might take a second.
God damn you.
Best horror score.
It follows.
I think.
Oh yeah. I don't. Yeah. It's and no, again, that's there's so many scores that I love. I'm not trying to dog on any of the absolute greats. John Carpenter's obviously amazing. There's seriously so many great ones, but It Follows for sure. Disaster Piece. I love that soundtrack. I listen to it all the time.
It's amazing. We're not going to do best director. We're not going to do best director right now, but we're going to do the big three, starting with best actress.
Dude, that's so hard. I love Liv Tyler's performance in The Strangers. Right now, man, I might have to say Jenna Ortega. Like, truly, she impresses the hell out of me in horror. Like, I just want her to keep making horror movies.
That's a good one.
I think I want to see her do villain stuff. Like, I've only seen Scream 5 and X, but she has impressed the shit out of me in both.
Yeah,
so
that's a good answer. I wasn't expecting that answer. That's a good answer. Best horror actor.
Doug Jones. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Did you think I was gonna do that?
No, I didn't. Doug Jones is very good. I mean, actor. So
did you think you knew what my answers were going to be before you asked?
I just wrote down the categories. I maybe was mulling, so I knew It Follows, but that was the only one I could really pin down.
I trust in our viewers to know who Doug Jones is, but if you don't, fucking use the Google machine and look him up because he's in 17 of your favorite movies. All right.
And then last but not least, the codas, the moonlights, the almost La La Lands, The Shape of Waters. What is your best horror picture?
That's such a hard question. I it would be so easy for me to just say Pan's Labyrinth again. Everybody can lock that in their mind that I love that movie in this moment. And you might whatever, but I really think that what Halloween brought to the genre is unmatchable. A lot of it seems stereotypical and cheesy and corny now, but to me, that movie, it was a big part of me coming into the genre. And I think a lot of things, even things that you can't directly pinpoint their correlation, mm-hmm. are walking in Halloween's footsteps. So
yeah.
I think it is one of the greatest. I'm going to say it's my best picture for sure. Yeah.
All right. You heard it here first. These are Sean's definite answers. Hold to this for the end of life. I'm glad we did this. This was a good quick game. We wanted to do a game.
This is just a bummer because I really
going for a hand.
Well, yeah, I mean that too. But I want to ask you the same thing. But I know you're going to be prepped. So part of me wants to like wait until you don't know and then play this
game
with you.
Yeah, we can do that eventually. I won't think about it if it helps you at all. I won't. It's fine. We'll do it another time. Okay. As always, guys, if you're listening to this, thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for rolling with the punches of this podcast as we try to figure out kind of our new internal schedules and still kick out some stuff for you guys. We didn't say it. We should have at the very beginning. If you haven't pre-ordered Elena's book, The Butcher and the Wren, do that.
Do it.
There's only a hardcover, which is great. You can get it from Barnes & Noble. You can get it from Amazon. You can get it from a couple of other places too. It comes out in September, but support and pre-order that. Should have mentioned that at the very tippy top.
Absolutely. I imagine a lot of our listeners are Morbid fans. If you're not, check out the Morbid podcast. We love Ash and Elena. They are amazing people. I'm sure that Elena's book kicks ass. I cannot wait to read it.
It's going to be so good.
We'll have to bring her on to talk about the book.
Maybe we'll do that soon. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you guys for listening. As always, we appreciate it. And we will see you all next week.
Goodbye.
If you like Mostly Horror, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcast.
Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.